This is Guildcast, episode 43, for August 26th, 2006. Hey everyone, welcome back to Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean. This week, we'll be doing another profession episode, this time about the assassin. Like I mentioned last episode, this is the only profession I don't actually use in the game. Actually, what I said was, this is the only profession I never beat the game with, which was not entirely true, and I have no idea where that came from. But I actually haven't beaten the game with my ritualist either, and until like 4 days ago, I hadn't beaten it with my mesmer either, but I finally got Hell's Precipice out of the way. So basically, I don't know what I was even talking about. I think I was drunk last show or something. No, just kidding. This isn't Dignation, and I'm certainly not Alex Albrecht. So anyway, the assassin. Yeah, this should be interesting. I'm eagerly awaiting all the emails I get telling me I was wrong about this or that, since I've actually never played an assassin firsthand. But I actually found some really incredible sources for this topic. I'm thinking maybe I should have made an assassin for this show, though. Nah, not worth it. So as always, there were some people who asked to be mentioned this week. They include Sahu Assassin, which is an appropriate name for this episode, Drofwork the Unholy, Callum, and Drunk Monkey from the Red Reborn Guild, who wrote me an interesting email that I'll probably read on our email show coming up soon. And we had a nice little press release this week from the GuildWars.com website that I'll read over a little bit here. August 24th, 2006, Bellevue, Washington. ArenaNet and NCSoft today announced that Guild Wars Nightfall, the next game in the award-winning and critically acclaimed Guild Wars franchise, will be available in stores worldwide on October 27th, 2006. The news was announced today from the Guild Wars Factions World Championship in Leipzig, Germany. In this third Guild Wars campaign, players must fight to hold back the night as a mad ruler attempts to free an outcast god and bring darkness to the continent of Ilona. But players won't fight alone. Guild Wars Nightfall introduces new customizable heroes who level up, follow players' instructions in combat, and use skills and equipment of the player's choosing. These heroes will follow the player through savage coasts, ancient monuments, and poisonous deserts during an epic story that spans 20 missions and hundreds of quests. And for the ultimate one-on-one challenge, competitive players can choose to enter the new Hero vs. Hero battles, where they group with a custom team of heroes and fight against other players from around the world and their customized groups of heroes. Guild Wars Nightfall will be available in both Standard and Collector's Editions. The highly coveted Limited Run Collector's Edition will include the Guild Wars Nightfall game, as well as a Making of Guild Wars Nightfall behind-the-scenes DVD, a collector's art book, collectible skill pins, a character mini standee, a poster-sized map of Ilona, the Guild Wars Nightfall soundtrack CD, and more. Eager fans can get the Guild Wars Nightfall pre-release bonus pack in stores on September 15th. And the Guild Wars Nightfall Standard Edition and Guild Wars Nightfall Collector's Edition on October 27, 2006. So, that's pretty exciting news. I don't think it's really shocking news, since that date is exactly 6 months from the faction's release, but it's nice to know that they're still on track. And this customizable henchy or hero thing seems to be the buzz all around town. It'll probably be the major game mechanic change of Nightfall, like how Alliance battles were the major game mechanic change in factions. So I'm really looking forward to Nightfall's release more and more. I played quite a bit in that Double Your Fun weekend last weekend. I wasn't even going to, really, but I figured I'd try it out just for the double factions. And I went ahead and I made a Ranger, and I went out to Fort Aspenwood on the Kurzik side. It was getting quite discouraging, and I think we were at, like, 3 wins and 13 losses after a while, but I liked the map, I knew exactly what had to be done, and I was set up as a fairly effective Amber Runner. So I was having fun, you know, except for the whole losing constantly thing. So then, while I'm complaining about this on Alliance Chat, Lady Sinea is like, why don't you try Jade Quarry? So I'm thinking, Jade Quarry? I think the last time I tried that was like during the Factions preview weekend, and it pretty much sucked. And I had no idea what to do there, and I didn't have the map memorized like I did from Fort Aspenwood. And plus, I'm pretty stubborn, so I played a few more times in Fort Aspenwood, and then after losing every one of those times, I thought, you know, it really couldn't hurt to try out the quarry. Well, it turns out I'm a dummy for not trying this sooner. There was literally like 3 hours left in the event when I discovered how much I love Jade Quarry and winning in the quarry, especially. We would have like consecutive 10 to nothing shutouts in there, and it was a lot of fun, especially being a ranger. I ditched the amber running build and did a more of a, like a barrage build that was very similar to my PvE ranger build. So the point of the story? There is none. But I now love Jade Quarry, and I'm about 35,000 faction into my Friend of the Kurzix title, which is my newest goal, and we'll see how long that lasts. You want to know the biggest secret for playing an assassin well? You want to know everything you'll ever need to know about being an effective assassin? The assassin is not a tank. The end. Even though that is the truth, there's a lot more to an assassin than that. It's just, if you play an assassin, you need to repeat that line over and over again before joining a party. I am not a tank. I am not a tank. I am not a tank. Then you should be fine. I was gonna make this show like the last few profession shows, where I got an everyday player who knows their class well to come on and talk with us about their class on Skype. And then I realized that there's no one who really knows how to play the assassin well. Boy, am I ever going to get some hate mail for this episode. Well, you had to expect me to make fun of the assassin just a little bit during the show, right? But, okay, I'll stop. For a minute. As you all may know, the assassin is a new profession introduced with Guild Wars Factions. It uses an Asian ninja theme, rather than that of the Arabic Hashashashin, from which the word assassin comes. Like the ninjas in common myth, the assassin uses a combination of quickness, aerobatics, and weapons to become a deadly killer. A new assassin starts out with 25 energy and plus 4 energy regeneration due to its class-specific armor. At base level, assassins have 20 energy and plus 2 energy regeneration, but then when you add the fact that all assassin guises give plus 5 energy and all assassin leggings give plus 1 energy regeneration, and then all assassin shoes also give plus 1 to energy regeneration. That's where you get the 25 energy and the plus 4 energy regeneration. The starter armor has a value of 15, and the armor obtainable later in the game has a maximum base level of 70, and it can provide additional energy or bonuses against a specific damage type, coupled with a 20% duration reduction to specific conditions. Both warriors and assassins engage opponents at close quarters. However, the assassin's armor is significantly lower than that of a warrior. This is compounded by the use of daggers requiring both hands, and so precluding the use of a shield. As a result, assassins take far more damage when attacked. This has caused many players to scorn assassins for their physical weakness and has led to the somewhat unfair perception that they are useless. no comment. Assassin skills do not use adrenaline. With all attacks energy-based, the assassin consumes and needs more energy, and so they have 25% more energy than a warrior, and twice the warrior's energy regeneration. All assassin dagger skills chain into a combo, so certain attacks must follow other attacks. Like a lead attack can be made at any time. If a lead attack is successful, a slash mark will appear on your opponent's health bar. An offhand attack usually requires a lead attack mark on the target. If an offhand attack is successful, a cross mark will appear on your opponent's health bar. And then we have a dual attack, which usually requires an offhand attack mark on the target. If a dual attack is successful, a starburst mark will appear on the opponent's health bar. So it goes lead attack, offhand attack, dual attack. The next attack skill in the sequence must hit before the required mark fades. Each mark lasts about 20 seconds from when it's given. Normal attacks and or other skills may be used in between without interrupting the attack sequence. I found this really interesting article on guildwiki.org that several people have assembled, and they call it the Effective Assassin Guide. So I'm going to read through it here because it seems really interesting, and hopefully it can help even experienced assassins in the game. The assassin is a hit-and-run expert, capable of moving in, dealing a substantial amount of damage, then retreating to safety. Assassins provide a means to deliver spike damage by those who utilize them correctly. Armed with fast-hitting daggers, medium-grade armor, and high energy regeneration, the assassin can hit quick and hard. Primarily being a melee combatant, a large number of players play the assassin like a warrior. However, with less armor, no absorption, and without a shield, they usually do not fare as well as their melee brethren. As a result, many PvE groups actively ignore assassin primaries altogether, or restrict the number of them in the group. Do not perpetuate this generalization, and know how and when to pull out. The assassin's strength is in its high damaging and condition-causing dagger chains. Beware, however, that any break in the chain, usually caused by an opponent dodging or blocking an attack, will often leave the assassin waiting for the opening attack to recharge. While this may only be a problem in some areas of PvE, be particularly aware of it in PvP. The longer the chain, the more chances your opponent has to break it. Also keep track of energy costs of the individual attacks. With the goal of achieving large damage in a short amount of time, any pause to regenerate energy to continue a dagger chain gives the opponent a chance to put up defenses or to heal. The Assassin Attack Chain Quick Reference can be a useful tool for fitting together an attack chain. Assassins are the only class to make heavy use of shadow stepping. This allows them to move in and retreat in a split second. The base damage of daggers is quite low, so don't hesitate to shadow step away to heal or to set up defensive skills while you're waiting for your chain to recharge. In PvE, foes will often acquire a new target, increasing the assassin's survivability after you've shadow stepped. In PvP, utilize shadow stepping to quickly close the distance to energy casters or retreat from their melee. An assassin must be wary of how to maintain its energy. While it has 4 pips of energy regeneration, the energy pool is often quite low when wielding daggers. As a result, attack chains can quickly run the assassin dry of energy, and only hitting with the low base damage of the daggers. By raising critical strikes, the assassin not only increases its chance to score a heavy hit against its foe, but also energy gained from the hit. This energy comes with no extra action needed by the assassin, but gains are still based on chance. Alternatively, attacks such as Golden Lotus Strike and Black Lotus Strike can be used to regain energy. Critical Eye can be used to further amplify critical strike chances and gains, and the critical strike attack will guarantee 2 critical hits if the attacks find their mark. Trying to create a tanking build out of an assassin is possible, but not recommended. Most forms of tanking require either enchantments, which can be removed, or stances, which can be ended with Wild Blow or Wild Strike. Most do not deal with heavy damage from enemy casters. Now for the assassin's attribute summary, there's critical strikes. Increasing points into this will raise the inherent chance to land a critical hit with a weapon attack. However, the increase is a mere 1%, whereas the increase gained by increasing an associated weapon skill is closer to 1.4%, meaning that if your goal is to gain maximum potential for critical hits, it's better to raise your weapon skill before raising critical strikes. However, you may still want to bump up critical strikes if it would move you to the next energy gain threshold. And then we have Dagger Mastery. Most of the dagger chain attacks are found here. The chance for a double strike is also increased by raising this attribute. Then we have deadly arts. This attribute primarily includes many non-dagger related offensive skills and debuffing hexes. And finally, we have shadow arts. This attribute contains more defensive and self-healing skills, but it also contains a few offensive skills. While most dagger-based assassins don't take much from their secondary, very useful skills can be added to increase the effectiveness of particular builds. So I'll go over each secondary and the potential effectiveness that each secondary can have with your assassin. For example, we have the Elementalist. One popular use of assassins is to create a series of knockdown chains, and shock is often used with them. The Assassin Elementalist Falling Shocker build is an example of this. In addition, the Conjure series of enchantments may work well with the high hit rate of daggers. Now, with Mesmer as your secondary, there's the numerous conditions that are caused by the assassin attacks, and with them, Fragility can add a fair amount of extra damage. Otherwise, snares may help keep a target in range, and Arcane Echo can be used with many of the dark and shadow art spells. Now, if you choose Monk, it can be used to help make up for the assassin's lower defense. Many choose to utilize the monk's protective and healing skills to keep him alive. Skills such as Contemplation of Purity work very well with the sustained shadow stepping enchantments, such as Aura of Displacement. This allows extra healing upon retreat. Now, if you choose a necromancer, you can use Plague Touch, which works wonders when you're already in melee range. This is something that's also useful if you have a warrior primary. Rigor Mortis may likewise be useful to ensure that chained dagger attacks find their mark. Other curses such as Barbed or Mark of Pain can be more effective with the high hit rate of daggers. Now, if you choose a ranger as your secondary, you can pick up a bow, which increases the assassin's distance from the foes, and thus improves its survivability. The Assassin Ranger Critical Barrager build lays out most of the advantages of this combination, allowing for critical strikes to take advantage of bow's high damage range. Another application of this profession combination is for running, as alternating Storm Chaser and Dark Escape allows for a constant speed boost. Now, with a Ritualist, if you set up Defensive Spirits ahead of time, the assassin can focus on dealing damage and have a better chance of coming out alive. Spirit Walk may also be used as a means to return back to the safety of the spirits should the pressure begin to mount. Now, if you pick a warrior secondary, the assassin gains access to a number of defensive stances from the tactics line. Fast-hitting daggers recharge adrenal skills such as Watch Yourself and Benetti's Defense quite quickly. On the other hand, many choose to use a weapon with a high range of damage, such as an axe, and they combine it with critical strikes to land the upper end of the damage spectrum more often. And this is seen with the Assassin Warrior, aptly named Axassin build. Now, as for the equipment, you have some pretty good choices. For armor and runes, the Assassin armor provides a number of unique bonuses. Armor that grants a bonus while attacking may be useful during battle, but it may not be active during crucial times when stopping to heal. Armor that shortens condition durations may also be useful if unable to remove them by other means. Energy-granting armor is often popular to allow dagger chains to be linked with less of a chance of having to stop the chain to regenerate. Now, as for weapons, the assassin's usual weapon is the daggers, of course. Requiring both hands and having low base damage, their primary advantage is speed. With dual strikes and double strikes, in addition to a fast attack speed, any buff that adds damage to each hit will find quite an improvement when paired with daggers. Vampiric and Zealous weapon mods can easily compensate for the pip of degeneration as long as the assassin keeps landing blows. However, requiring both hands, there is no room for a defensive shield or energy-granting offhand item. Many assassins will also choose a non-dagger weapon with a high variance in damage. The goal is to raise the chance of critical strikes, thereby using the highest damage that the weapon can produce more frequently. So in summary, I'll go over a general plan of attack that you may want to at least experiment with on your own assassin. In PvE, assassins tend to have a harder time than many other classes. Like the Mesmer, the class does a good job at focusing on an individual target, but has a more difficult task against large groups of angry mobs. Worse yet, the AI tends to focus on weaker armored targets, often resulting on them focusing on the assassin instead of the allied warrior. But what you can do is you can learn how to maneuver around your heavily armored friends, using them to body block your retreat when needed. Also be careful of using the defensive shadow stepping skills that randomly move you, as it may place you in aggro within a nearby group of enemies. Shadow stepping proves invaluable as a tactical tool. Enemy warriors cannot body block against it, so it can be extremely useful to reaching backline casters. While the warriors should try to tank in the center of battle, the assassin should be jumping around the fringes, wounding or taking out isolated targets before moving back to heal. Skills such as Aura of Displacement and Shadow of Haste are useful in that they provide a means to reach an opponent as well as a means to escape in one skill. Now, I know I joke about assassins, mainly because it's kind of like the running joke now in Guild Wars. But the truth is, my ranger has a secondary as assassin, mainly for the healing of Shadow Refuge and Heart of Shadow. And I'm always intrigued by the effectiveness of assassins in PvP. I've seen some pretty amazing things done by assassins, where I literally didn't even know what hit me, and then boom, I'm dead. Doing the research for this episode has really opened my eyes to how playing an assassin might be pretty fun. So I may end up making one soon enough, especially for PvP, but who knows? We all change our minds eventually, and we do things that we never thought we'd do before, right? Heck, I even saw Loudon playing PvP last week.
Hey, this is Solera here, bringing you yet another PvP update. And this week we're doing the Assassin. First off, the Assassin, not liked in PvE, as Sean and Lady Sinea probably went into great length about. But in PvP, the Assassin, whether primary or secondary, can be a huge, huge upset on the battlefield and can turn the tide of any alliance battle and many a GVG even. And you can see assassins in both primary and secondary being used by everybody in the ladder pretty much, because there's a lot of good builds that go along with the assassin. A couple of them, one of the pre-mades they used to have, I also enjoyed very much with what's an elementalist assassin. And what you would do is use, say, Phoenix and the other point blank spells, and you would jump in with a teleportation skill from the assassin. You would unleash all the close range skills you could, and you would jump out. Now, while this may not have been good for, say, Hero's Ascent, this was very good for alliance battles, where there was a lot of people and things could get hectic, and maybe you weren't targeting the elementalist right away, or you didn't even notice the elementalist was there. If he just popped in, hit you for a lot of damage, and popped out, that could be devastating to both your health and the people's health around you. Also, a lot of people, and I know I said before that I wasn't going to do specific builds, and I didn't really want to because of kind of PvP being about the builds, really, and about you making your own. And I guess I'm kind of going back on my word. I am going to start doing builds, and it's not because, let's say, it's necessary, but I've been getting a lot of people whispering me in-game, and a lot of people posting on the boards saying they want builds. They maybe want me to go a little more into builds I like. And one of the builds I've seen used a lot in GVG is this Falling Shocker build. And it uses Aura of Displacement, Shock, Falling Spider, Twisting Fangs, Disrupting Stab, Dark Escape, and Shadow Refuge, and of course, Resurrection Signet. And these skills can, well, I'd buy them from the priest, since I wouldn't be making an assassin all the way through the game, but that's your preference, not mine. But what it uses is it uses Aura of Displacement, of course, to jump into and hit your opponent very quickly with Shock, and then follow that with Falling Spider after the knockdown, and then Twisting Fangs will be your last one. Or you could use Disrupting Stab after Aura of Displacement if Shock is not available. It's really nice to use Disrupting Stab a lot on, say, the longer healing casts, like Healing Signet or Troll Ungrant or Healing Breeze, where you can go in there and really hit them fast and really take that out, and that could really, really hurt their healing. Another one I've seen a lot of people use in, say, an alliance battle situation is an Assassin Ranger. And while this build is not yet up on Wiki, I've seen a lot of people use it, and it's the Critical Barrager. And what that does is it uses the Critical Strikes and the skill Barrage to deal a massive amount of critical hits to as many people as you can hit as soon as possible. And this works very well, actually, in dealing mass amounts of damage. It's not as popular as, say, the Touch Ranger, but it's a lot less cheap, in my opinion. And while the Assassin may not be used well in PvE, I would suggest you try it out in PvP if you have any inklings in Alliance battles and in Team Arenas or Random Arenas. Also, I'd like to note, as Sean said on the forums, I don't know if he's going to say it in the show as we record at different times, but yes, I was kind of out of sync last week. I had plans to record on a certain date, and those plans fell through because I had some stuff in real life to deal with. I had to do some recording into the studio, and that kind of held me up the night I was going to record because we stayed at our drummer's house. So, I didn't get to record last week, but as a PvP guy in a Greens episode, really Greens are just for a PvP character to have a good weapon that also looks cool, and really that has nothing to do with PvP, just looking cool, I guess. And if you want to look cool, I'm all for that. I like to look cool too, but I really couldn't have had much to say anyways. I probably would have made an offshoot episode of my own. In that, I wouldn't have done the Greens, but, you do what you can do. And I'm still around. You guys aren't getting rid of me yet. So, this is Solero, signing off for another PvP update.
Hey all, this is Lady Senea bringing you the word on the street. I was going to try to tell you something about assassins this week, because I've seen, well, not actually seen, but heard about, rather, a critical barrager that was effective in tombs. But to tell you the truth, I really know jack about assassins, and I did finally delete mine, so I am definitely not an authority by any means on this class. Conceptually, I understand how to play an assassin. My biggest complaint about them, though, is that most people try to play them like a tank, and they just don't have the health and armor that a warrior does, so they can't do the same things. An assassin has a really strong healing spell called Shadow Refuge, and it gives you up to 9 health regeneration. And I think if you add a rune, you can get 10 out of it. But the thing is, it only lasts for 4 seconds. So that kind of gives you an idea of how long an assassin should be in melee range. They should Shadow Step, get in, make their kill, and get out. That is just the nature of assassins in any game, in all of history. They're supposed to be silent killers, getting in, striking, and getting out, and disappearing before anyone knew they were there. And that is about the extent of what I know about assassins in Guild Wars. So what I thought I'd do is, instead of trying to pretend like I know something about assassins, I will just kind of stay on topic here and talk to you about factions. I'm going to read to you a post that I wrote and put on the Guildcast forums a few weeks ago. When I first posted this, I thought I was going to get a lot of flack and hate mail from it, but actually I ended up instead finding out that a lot of people agreed with me, which surprised me. But I still kind of expect a lot of hate mail from this anyway. What this is about is, on the whole, I would much rather play in Tyria than in Cantha. So here's my dissertation on why Tyria is greater than Kanta. I am sure that any of these points can be argued to support the reverse opinion, but this is just my take on the matter. When I posted this, the biggest rebuttal that I got was that most of the points that I made here are all geared towards a role player, and there were a lot of innovations as far as PvP aspects go, and things like that. So, yeah, I'm not saying that Factions was a horrible game, but I do have to say that there is no comparison between how much I enjoyed Prophecies as opposed to Factions. Now, this contains spoilers for both Chapter 1 and Chapter 2, so you might not want to listen if you don't want to know how the stories end. So this is Why Tyria Pwns Kanta. First, gameplay mechanics. 1. The learning curve in Factions is steeper than in Prophecies. In Prophecies, you gradually gain levels as you move through the game. Even if all you do is primary quests and missions, you still make it through alright, matching at least the levels of the henchies that you encounter in each town. There's lots of time to get to know your character, so you're ready for the big battles when they come. In Factions, however, you're thrown right into the fray almost at once. It goes from really, really, really boring and basic to, bam, level 20 everything's attacking you. Even as an experienced Guild Wars player, doing lots and lots of quests on Xingjie Island with my assassin, I was surprised to end up on the mainland at level 16, getting owned by everything and having to be rezzed by my level 20 henchies. I had to go back to the island and look for the attribute quests, as well as some others that I had missed. Being level 20 in Sanctum K means something. Being level 20 in Napui Quarter means squat. 2. Ascension is so much cooler than Wei No Su. When you battle your doppelganger, you're alone in that fight. It's a true test of your mettle in battle, to see if you have what it takes to fight the good fight. In Napui, it's just another mission like any other. 3. Bonus missions are better than Masters. Working for Masters has made me edgy and not enjoy the game as much. Even when I go into Tyrian missions now, I feel like I have to rush, rush, rush. I have to consciously remind myself that I can slow down and that there's no timer watching me. Now, this has changed a bit since I wrote this, because ever since I got my Protector of Kanta title, I don't care about speed anymore, and I'm starting to enjoy the game again. 4. Which game has more free skills from quests? Enough said. 5. Skill capping. Skill capping in Tyria was much more interesting with random spawns. You actually have to go hunting, and the reward when you discover and slay your quarry is capturing an elite skill. In Kanta, you just have to fight massive amounts of mobs, but the boss always hangs out in the same spot. I guess that could be easier in some respects, but where's the fun in that? 6. The voice acting. I guess it's not a part of the gameplay itself, but seriously, the voice acting in Factions is so bad that I can describe it with a lot of unprintable words. Just watch any scene in Factions, and then go to Prophecies and watch that scene where Rurik dares to call his father proud and foolish. Now, which do you think was directed with a wee bit more care than the other? Next, the characters. 1. So, you're of the royal line. And thus, Togo died. And no one grieved. 2. The dragons. Glint is the wise and powerful, all-seeing and all-knowing prophet. Kunavang got enslaved by a dead dude. 3. I have returned! Muhahaha! Insert silly laugh that's not sinister at all. Honestly, am I the only one who has trouble trying to take this guy seriously? 4. Shiro had the potential to be a great character, but he wasn't. His past didn't seem focused upon enough. He could have been an awesome, tragic character. They should have played up his background, showing how noble and loyal he was. He should have commanded respect and inspired confidence in his men. That would have set up the story well, and then when he finally did go mad and become the betrayer, it would have had much more impact. It always hurts the most when someone you love and trust betrays you. And then, in the end, when you finally have to face him, you would have felt bad for him. Even knowing about all the people that he had killed, you would be unable to hate him, only feel sorry for him. It would be with a mixture of pity and compassion that you would strike the life from him, killing Shiro and releasing him from his tormented existence. Now, that would have been a cool story. 5. Prince Rurik. I'd follow him west over the Shiver Peaks, thrusting aside my prejudice as we ventured into the realm of the Crichtons. And if his step were to falter and he could lead no more, I'd raise his banner and press on in his name, forging a path through a dense jungle, trekking slowly across a barren desert and into the very mouth of the Fire Islands themselves. And if at the end he asked one last request of me, I would grant it, no matter how much it pained me to do so. 6. You are no longer my prince, and you are no longer my son. Although I am on good terms with my father now, there was a time when I was not. If you have ever been disowned and cast from home, then you know how Prince Rurik must have felt. 7. It is not my will to fight you, but I have little choice in the matter. And that final blow, did that not wrench your heart? Next, the cities and the storyline. 1. The Asian theme in Cantha bores me. It's too real-worldy. I want fantasy, a place where I can escape away to. I suppose it seems cool and exotic to someone who's not exposed to this type of culture much, but it does nothing for me. Maybe it's because I've had to sit through one too many lion dances at wedding receptions and such, as the dancers ward off evil spirits and promote prosperity and things like that. Sorry to anyone who didn't want to hear that I'm half Asian. Just ignore this part and go back to imagining that I'm a leggy blonde cheerleader. Or you can be like Junkmaster and claim that all you remember hearing me say was the words, "I am a leggy blonde cheerleader." 2. Tyrian cities have character. More precisely, they are characters in themselves. You can think of any of the major hubs, like Ascalon, Lion's Arch, or Drachna's Forge, and you know what the place is like, who the people are, and what their history is. It's like Gotham City. You know the place and would recognize it a mile away. Can you say the same for Kynang, Cavalon, or House Suhelza? 3. Ascalon. Have you ever loved something beautiful and lost it, and every day you pass by a pale, distorted mirror image of it, reminding you constantly of what once was? 4. The storyline and factions sucked. Gee, I wonder if Shiro will return. I wonder if our heroes will slay him and save Cantha. Please. 5. The storyline and prophecies rocked. The twists and turns of the story kept you guessing. So much happened in the game, and there are still so many unanswered questions that remain from the prophecy storyline. I plan on sometime writing an essay discussing whether or not the Mersat were actually good guys after all. 6. You can hate the enemies in Tyria. You have reasons to kill them. No one had qualms about killing those hateful beasts, the Char, who wreaked so much destruction and changed the world forever. And there is something gruesomely satisfying about slaying White Mantle after you witness their ceremonies on the Bloodstone. 7. The plague in Cantha didn't mean anything to me. No one I knew and loved got affected by it. What did you say, random guard dude? Bring back your son? Sure. Okay. I guess it would have been more interesting saving him if he weren't so whiny, and if Togo didn't sound like such a dork trying to comfort him. And finally, 8. The reason why we're here. Canthans fight because they fear they may lose everything. Tyrians fight because they already have. And that, my friends, is why I say that Tyria pones Cantha. This has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
In this skills and build segment, I'm going to go over an assassin build that's popular in both PvE and PvP, and it seems to be quite effective, from what I hear. It's the Palm of the Golden Phoenix build. What this build basically does is it helps to skip the lead attack, since Palm Strike automatically counts as an offhand attack. So along with Golden Phoenix Strike, you can basically have double offhand attacks. You want as many points as possible in Critical Strikes, then Dagger Mastery, and then Shadow Arts. With no skills used from a secondary profession in this build, you can get some high value into the three attributes that you will use. The skills in this build are Palm Strike, which is an elite, Twisting Fangs, Golden Phoenix Strike, Death Blossom, Way of Perfection, Critical Eye, Shadow Refuge, and Blinding Powder. Wait, what's this? No res? Yeah, I didn't make up this build, but I think they didn't include a res because the others in the party will be the ones needing the res for you. Okay, sorry. Back to the skills. With Palm Strike, target touched foe takes 10 to 70 shadow damage. This Critical Strike's elite skill counts as an offhand attack and costs 10 energy, has 3 quarters of a second activation time, and a 10 second recharge time. You can only cap the skill from Kenshi Steelhand in the Book Deck Byway. The next skill is Twisting Fangs, which must follow an offhand attack. If it hits, Twisting Fangs strikes for plus 10 to 18 damage, and the struck foe suffers from bleeding and deep wound for 5 to 17 seconds. This Critical Strike's dual attack costs 10 energy and has a 15 second recharge time. It can be obtained from the skill quest Dual Strike in Kinya Province. Next we have the offhand attack Golden Phoenix Strike. If you're not enchanted, this skill misses, but if it hits, Golden Phoenix Strike deals 10 to 26 damage. This Dagger Mastery offhand attack costs 10 energy and has an 8 second recharge time. You can buy it from Michiko in Kaineng Center, Akane in Senji's Corner, and Ruben in St. Njeka's Shrine. This skill can be used without following a lead attack, making it similar to Palm Strike. It can, however, only be used while enchanted. And then we have Death Blossom, which must follow an offhand attack. If it hits, Death Blossom strikes target foe for 15 to 35 damage, and all adjacent foes for 15 to 35 damage. This Dagger Mastery dual attack costs 5 energy and recharges in 12 seconds. You can only get it from Masaharu in Saitung Harbor. As Death Blossom is a dual attack, the area effect damage from this skill is applied twice. The area effect is considered direct damage rather than an attack, so it can't miss or be blocked. Area damage is only triggered when an attack strikes, so anything that causes your attacks against the target to miss will also negate it. Note also that you'll only do one packet of area damage if your first hit is sufficient to kill your target. The next skill is Way of Perfection. For 10 to 30 seconds, whenever you successfully make a critical hit, you gain 10 to 30 health. This Shadow Arts enchantment spell costs 5 energy, has a 1 second activation time, and recharges in 30 seconds. This is your enchantment that you'll cast before Golden Phoenix Strike. You can get this from the quest Skill Chaining in Xingjie Monastery. Okay, next we have Critical Eye. For 10 to 30 seconds, you have an additional 1 to 6% chance to land a critical hit when attacking. You gain 1 energy whenever you score a critical hit. This Critical Strike skill costs 5 energy and recharges in 30 seconds. You also get this from the Skill Chaining quest in Xingjie Monastery. And because it has no activation time, Critical Eye cannot be interrupted. Also, Critical Eye's duration-based effect cannot be removed because it is a skill and not a stance or enchantment. Much like a shout, Critical Eye can be activated while moving, attacking, or activating another skill. Energy gained on a critical hit is in addition to any energy gained from the Critical Strike's attribute. Therefore, this skill increases energy return in two ways. It returns 1 point per critical hit, and it increases the likelihood of critical hits themselves. Next, we have my favorite self-healing spell, Shadow Refuge. For 4 seconds, you gain 5 to 9 health regeneration. When Shadow Refuge ends, you gain 20 to 68 health if you are attacking. This Shadow Arts enchantment spell costs 5 energy has an activation time of 1 second and a recharge time of 8 seconds. This is one of the spells you get automatically when you're an assassin, whether primary or secondary. And finally, we have Blinding Powder, which must follow an offhand attack. Target foe becomes blinded for 3 to 13 seconds. This Shadow Art spell costs 5 energy, has a quarter second activation time, and recharges in 20 seconds. You can get this from the quest Advanced Defense Techniques in Xingjie Monastery. Now, as for how to use this build effectively, first, use Way of Protection and Critical Eye. Then you start your assault with Palm Strike, which recharges in 10 seconds. And then you use Blinding Powder if you're attacking warriors, rangers, or assassins. Then you use Twisting Fangs to inflict bleeding and deep wound. You check to see and make sure that you're still enchanted. And if you're not enchanted, you cast Shadow Refuge. Use Golden Phoenix Strike, followed by Death Blossom after that. Then you heal yourself again with Shadow Refuge if you need to. And as a side note, some good daggers to use with this build are Zealous Jade Daggers of Fortitude because of the energy gain and the plus 30 to your health. Actually, any daggers that are zealous or have some effectiveness while enchanted will work well with this build. Well, once again, we reached the end of another episode of Guildcast. I hope everyone enjoyed all the info, and I also hope that it can help you to either play your assassin better or even get you interested in starting one up like it has for me. A little. Next week's show will be all about titles, explaining what they mean and going over some of the more impressive ones. Since I never got around to making a contest in the forums last week like I said I might do, I promise I'll try my best to attempt to possibly put one in this week. The Backwards Drox running contest will be tomorrow night, so if I remember, I'll talk about the results on next week's show. And I know I haven't mentioned it in quite a while, but let me go ahead and mention it now. If you need to contact one of us, you can contact me at sean@guildcast.com. That's S-H-A-W-N. You can contact Lady Sinea at ladysinea@gmail.com. That's ladysinaea@gmail.com. And you can contact Wild Prince Solero at Solero, C-I-L-E-R-O, @guildcast.com. But until next time, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.
Hey, Sean, it's a Drunken Assassin. I just wanted to direct you and your listeners to Virgin Worlds podcast number 26. They gave you a really great review, and they give some other amazing podcasts. So, love the show. Bye.
Life's not easy for a skinny guy. You're first to be left out on the side, left behind, don't ask me why. Oh, skinny guy. And life's not easy for a skinny guy. No matter how much I try, skinny off, skinny fast, skinny neck, don't ask me why.